City Journal is often referred to as a conservative magazine, but our writers are a pretty odd bunch of conservatives. Very few of them started out that way. Instead, they've come to their positions through experience and reflection. The result is that there's nothing party line about their approach to anything. They're accustomed to figuring things out for themselves and coming to their own conclusions, which makes for original and iconoclastic journalism. Contributing editor Sol Stern is Exhibit A. In the 60s and early 70s, he was a writer for the flamboyantly countercultural magazine Ramparts, bashing the CIA and praising the Viet Cong. During an editorial lunch a while ago, he began to tell us about how he'd covered the Altamont Rock Festival for Ramparts, when another one of our oddly conservative contributing editors cried out, "Oh my God, were you at Altamont too?" Then, in the 80s and early 90s, he worked for the governments of New York City and New York State, principally as chief aide to the city council president. Perhaps most important of all, he had children, and so became a close observer of the New York City public schools. This turned him into a passionate school reformer. New York's most perceptive school scholar, as the Daily News called him. His City Journal stories on what's wrong with the public schools, on why Catholic schools work, on why vouchers are a good solution, have hugely influenced the mayor and the entire school reform debate in the city. He's at work now on a book about public education to be published next year. Sol Stern.
When I was invited to speak at this August forum, I was very thrilled. I didn't realize that Myron would reveal details about my misspent youth, and that Tom Wolfe would then bash everything I believed in the 60s. I could just say there were some good dances, you know, not the Lambada. Anyway, I'd like to start by paraphrasing one of Myron's favorite authors. In New York City education today, these are the worst of times and the best of times. It's the worst of times because the old regime of teacher unions and the permanent bureaucracy are very powerful. Like the Bourbons of old, they are intransigent. Certainly they will resist any change that threatens their jobs and their privileges. Because of these powerful interests, we continue to have a dysfunctional education system, a system where there is no reward for excellence and virtually no penalty for failure. Yes, of course, there are thousands and thousands of really dedicated people working in those schools, but those dedicated educators are betrayed by the system and by its perverse incentives. And because of this dysfunctional system, it is also the worst of times for hundreds of thousands of children. These children, mostly poor and minority, are being denied the American dream. They're denied the opportunity that the rich and the middle class take for granted, the right to choose a school that works for them. If I can shift the metaphor from pre-revolutionary France to post-revolutionary Russia, what we have sentenced these poor children to is a gulag archipelago of failing schools. Even the defenders of the system have conceded that there are 300 schools in the city of New York where failure is the norm. We know that two-thirds of the fourth graders in the city can't pass a basic reading test. We have high schools where just three or four kids graduate with a Regents diploma. And even thousands of those who do get a high school diploma can barely read or write at a 10th grade level, which part of which was revealed by the CUNY task force that Heather participated in. Yet it's also the best of times. It's a time of hope. Never before in my memory have so many people been raising their voices and demanding fundamental, yes, even revolutionary change in the education system. Never before have so many people been willing to challenge the conventional wisdom of our public education. The notion that what's wrong with schools is that they don't have enough resources. People are starting to figure out that the problem in New York City is not lack of money. How could it be? We have about $10 billion to spend on education, about $9,000 per pupil. It's true that the city doesn't have as much money for education as the suburbs, and it never will have as much money as the suburbs. But that's not the appropriate comparison. Instead, compare the money available to the money available in the Catholic schools. They spend about half as much as we do, and they get better results. So it's not the money, stupid, it's the system. This system was created about 100 years ago, just before the beginning of the 20th century. And for a good part of this century, it did a reasonable job of educating the children, of integrating the immigrants. But people are figuring out that the system has evolved into an unresponsive monopoly. It's a monopoly that is never subjected to competition, and in which there is no consequence for failure, no reward for success. And so as we enter the 21st century, there is a growing sense that we need a new paradigm, which we now have the definition of, for delivering education services. We know that the monopoly system just won't do anymore, and that the principle of competition, which we readily accept in so many other areas of our lives, it's also a good thing for education. I personally have been amazed at how the public debate about these issues has changed. When I started out writing about these issues in City Journal just 4 years ago, the idea of competition in education was very far off the radar screen of what was possible to do in this city. And in a way, it was reflected in the title that Myron chose for the first article I wrote about vouchers. The title was Vouchers, the Reform That Dares Not Speak Its Name. It was as if I was writing again for an underground newspaper in the 60s. Well, here we are 4 years later, and vouchers has certainly come out of the up from the underground. You can hardly pick up a newspaper or turn on a TV talk show without hearing one of those arguments about vouchers. Within the last couple of months, I've been amazed to see that four major columnists, one on each of New York City's daily newspapers, have essentially come out and said that vouchers are worth trying, and wondering why the education establishment is so scared of this idea. I don't know if City Journal has had something to do with that change of climate. The Times has given us some credit for this, but I don't always take everything in the Times at face value. But if credit is due, we should start with the mayor of New York. His role has been crucial. He was willing to say that as a matter of principle, we ought to allow as many of those children as possible to escape their failing schools. But he didn't just say it. He had the courage to expend some of his political capital and to fight hard for that principle. Partly because of that willingness, we already have in this city a budding voucher program, although it's privately funded. It's the School Choice Scholarship Program, and Roger Herzog, who's sitting in the front row, had a lot to do with it as well. And it's begun to change the way people think about this issue of education. One of the amazing things that it did was that it not only gave vouchers, private scholarships to kids to get out of failing public schools, but it did it on a lottery basis, and it did it in such a way that it were a two-match sample of kids. Some kids got the scholarship, other kids remained behind in the public schools. And as a result of that, the program was able to create what is essentially the gold standard in social science research, two perfectly matched samples. and the results have been extremely promising. The kids who left the public schools did significantly better in test scores in three out of four grades. But it's not just the test scores that matter. Perhaps the most significant difference is that the parents of the children who receive those vouchers are extremely pleased because they know their kids are in a safe, orderly environment. Whether they score 2 or 3 or 5 points higher on a standardized test is not as important to them as that their children will have a real chance to stay in school, stay out of jail, graduate, and go on to college. That's what every parent wants and what every parent is entitled to. Programs like this create a powerful new dynamic in the community, and I believe that's what's going to happen when we have even a small experimental program of publicly funded vouchers. And it goes something like this. Suppose you're a parent with a child in one of those failing public schools. You find out that the kid down the hall got a voucher, won the lottery, and is going to a Catholic school. And that voucher is worth $1,500. Then it turns out you find out he's getting a good education in a safe and an orderly environment. That child is more disciplined, is doing his homework. Those parents, the parents of the kids remaining in the public school, will inevitably begin to ask questions about why the public schools, which spend $9,000 per pupil, can't do these basic, simple things. They might begin to ask other questions. They might begin to wonder whether the teachers in the public schools are working hard enough. They may ask questions about what's wrong with the way the public schools spend the money. Finally, I believe they will begin to ask a moral question. If this society truly believes in equal opportunity, why is it that my child is stuck in a failing school? And I believe that's why the issue of vouchers is becoming a civil rights question. It's not because I say it is, but it's because this is the demand from those communities. And it's why people like Andrew Young and Martin Luther King III are signing on to this movement to allow children to go to the school of their choice. Make no mistake, we're only at the beginning of a very long battle. But I am confident that fundamental change is coming. One of the reasons I know this is because of Chancellor Rudy Cruz's reaction to the mayor's voucher proposal. He screamed and hollered. He said he came here to defend the system, not to dismantle it. He said, basically, vouchers over my dead body. Then one Sunday, about 2 months ago, maybe it was 6 weeks ago, I picked up the Daily News and I saw the front page headline. This is what it said. Cruz says, quote, to head off vouchers, he will take over the worst schools and shake up the system. When I saw that headline, I knew that in some sense we had almost won the battle. Because the battle is not an ideological one about private schools versus public schools. I have no interest in declaring victory for public for private education over public education. And why should I? I am entirely a product of the public schools, and so is almost everyone else in my family. Those schools once did a reasonable job for my family, and nothing would please me more than if they did that job again for those 300,000 kids. And so if Rudy Cruz carries out his promise, and in order to avoid vouchers, he really shakes up the system, then vouchers will have worked, and we will have extended that civil rights revolution. On the other hand, if, as I suspect, Rudy Cruz can accomplish that shaking up because the system as it's presently constituted is too intransigent, then the demand for vouchers will become even more irresistible. In any case, this movement to finish the civil rights revolution will have accomplished its goals. Because what we are about is not winning any ideological contests, but as a society to create the best possible schools for all of our children, to have a school system that puts the interests of the children ahead of the interests of its employees. And that's why I'm hopeful that this will soon be only the best of times, not a tale of two cities, but of one city that cares enough about the future of all its children to give them schools that really work, schools that put the interests of those children first. Thank you.